Welcome to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. I'm spanning the globe here for World FSHD Day as we recognize the day. Maybe you have your orange smiley or selfie smileys going on with the orange slices, or maybe you're doing that for social media. Please continue to do that. We love doing that. Maybe you're wearing your orange shirt today, getting involved. And I kind of call it celebrating it to some degree, you know, because we got to get people to know about it. And it's already a doom and gloom type disease as it is. So, hey, let's try to make something positive from it. And I think with the social media push, that always is helpful. We need more people to know about the disease. So as we have gone through interview to interview, talking with different people from Canada and Ohio and you name it throughout the world, even the UK, we can't not represent Australia. And that was where Emma Weatherly steps in and joins us all the way from Australia. Oh, I say all the way. For Emma, it's not. It's right in her own backyard. But thanks, Emma, for joining us, being here. I know it's early for you while we're recording this, so I appreciate you taking the time.
Hi, Tim. Great to be here. I'm really excited to be back on the radio show.
Yes. Oh, and it was great to see you in person about a year ago in Florida. That was a phenomenal event. So yes, I'm kind of seeing people that I thought, oh, I don't know, when's the next time we're really going to talk to them? But this is great to kind of touch base as we approach that anniversary of that. You know, each year, World FSHD Day, trying to do a little more to get that global impact. Now, for those that don't know, though, you know, Emma, you are not only are you someone that is being an advocate and pushing forward to help find a cure and treatments to this disease and the forefront of that, but you also have the disease. So it's a little bit of a personal mission as well, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I was diagnosed with FSHD, OG, around, I think, 11 years ago now. Looking back, I had symptoms into my childhood, but like many of us, you know, was misdiagnosed. You know, right. For a little while, I was told I had a connective tissue disorder. I was told it was because I was born prematurely, that my muscles had issues. For a little while, I was told I likely had MS. And eventually, you know, landed on FSHD. And I quickly got involved with FSHD Global as an ambassador. Back in 2015, I joined the foundation as a patient ambassador. I used to run my own, you know, personal fundraisers. I organized a movie night, had lots of lunches and morning teas and community events. And I always found that, you know, once I got really involved in the cause, for me, it was like a form of therapy. I'm a bit of an active, you know, I'm a doer. So I like to get in there and problem solve. And as we know, this disease, you can't really problem solve it. You can't logic your way through it. You need to, you know, we've all just got to be patient, but it doesn't mean that we can't do as much as we can in whatever capacity we have to be involved. And for me, it was really helpful and really rewarding. And the more I got involved with the foundation, I don't know, the more control it felt like it gave me to be part of the solution.
Sure.
Then a couple of years ago, we were doing, as a patient ambassador, I was involved in a meeting that the foundation had in Parliament House down in Canberra with a voice through to our government and lobbying for some policy change that was really needed here to support better diagnostics and pave the path into clinical trial readiness. And I had the opportunity to help the foundation prepare a white paper to government. And through that, I started working with Natalie and Bill, you know, in a volunteer capacity. And collectively, we just decided that the best thing to do for me at the time and for the foundation and for Australian FSHD efforts was for me to join the foundation full time. And I came on as the executive director at the end of 2021. And then last year, stepped into the managing director role, sort of the CEO and managing director role. And we're a small organization, so that sounds very high level and impressive, but we've only got 3 staff members. So, you know, just for a reality check there, it's not quite as, you know, as grand as it might seem. But for me, it's my proudest moment in my career to date to be able to step up and lead this foundation into what is a really exciting phase of the FSHD journey for us all globally. I mean, I'm really excited that during my leadership of the foundation, we will actually open clinical trial sites here in Australia. We will have therapeutic developments. We're looking at muscle regeneration. So what I'm most excited about as an FSHD patient is knowing the difference in conversations between neurologists and new patients. You know, I look back to when I was diagnosed and what that conversation was. And it was pretty doom and gloom. I mean, you probably went through the same thing, that you're told by your neurologist, look, you have this condition. There's really nothing we can do about it. Just, you know, do what you can and live your life. And I was really told to sort of not worry too much about work and take it easy.
Yeah.
And try to just, I think the words that we used were live the best life that I can. And I already know that those conversations are so different now, that neurologists can say, okay, well, you have this condition, but, you know, we know these things about nutrition. We know these things about the way your body is working. We know that there's therapies in pipeline and, you know, you need to connect with, you know, whatever your local organization is, whether it be FSHD Global or the FSHD Society. They'll keep you informed of what's happening. And I love that patients now, or people that are living with FSHD now, have a different conversation with their doctor because of the work that you guys are doing, the work that we're doing. So for me, I'm really proud to be able to not only live with the disease, but, you know, work towards where we're headed over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. It's really exciting.
Yeah, and what I've seen in the change, and you talk about that with the conversation with doctors, is, you know, then of course you hope that they know a little bit more about what's going on with the disease. Sometimes it felt like I knew more than my doctor, which always made me feel uncomfortable. So like, what am I doing here? I'll just go to Dr. Google instead. I probably get more information there. Yeah. But also the global connection, right? I mean, the fact that FSHD Society, FSHD Global, not working necessarily in silos. This is all a big connection. Kind of speak about that, the change and how much more it's people and groups are more connected now than before.
Yeah, I think these things tend to go through cycles. I mean, I know, you know, I work very closely with Natalie and Bill, and when Bill first started this foundation, he had and still has, you know, really close relationships with a lot of the other I call them the founding fathers. You probably can't call them that, but I have this idea of, you know, the giants that started this movement for FSHD. And I know, I think we're really lucky as a disease that we do have these international, for a rare disease, or, you know, we don't really know if it's rare once we get diagnosis sorted, I guess, but to have, you know, the level of involvement globally, I think is actually quite unusual. We're just so lucky that we have these people that had the foresight to start these organizations and really get things moving. And then I think, I don't know what happened, but maybe that dropped off a little bit over a period of time, or, you know, we really did get the science moving and everyone was maybe too busy to yeah. really collaborate. But I think we reached a point a couple of years ago where we all realized that we really need to work together and collaborate. And I think the FSHD Society has done a wonderful job in pulling together the World FSHD Alliance and making sure those conversations keep working. I know June does a lot of work and her team behind the scenes in formalizing all of that and keeping it running. But for me, stepping up from a patient, you know, volunteer into actually running an organization for FSHD, that has been so valuable to me to have those connections and be able to meet people. And coming along to Orlando last year and, you know, meeting everyone in person was amazing. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, you know, starting to all really work together, not just you know, collaborate and speak, but, you know, I know that we'll have a chat about Project Mercury later, but really working together and coming together, you know, in a project with international FSHD organizations and industry, I think will really expedite our cause, and it'll really get the most impact from all of our efforts being, you know, united in it, you know, with a single goal at the end of the day, which is to remove the barriers and fast track therapeutics. Really excited. So I'm very glad to have such, you know, like-minded people throughout the FSHD community and industry. I love that we have, you know, biopharma that are willing to collaborate and work together, which is incredible. Nice. And, you know, having our FSHD organizations, some of which are solely a volunteer resource, which I think is incredible. I don't know, we need to put it to the test, but maybe FSHD has a patient community with the biggest hearts and minds out of any disease that's there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's one of the most, what did they say, the second or third most predominant muscular dystrophy. And I think there are a lot of people have it and don't know it, misdiagnosed with something else. I think the community is larger than people realize. I think it's also a huge goal. It also seems of many of the groups to start even, you know, talking more about all the people that it affects, and that's including the young people. I think that's been kind of overlooked for a little bit because it doesn't manifest itself more commonly until, you know, 40 years old, late 30s, something like that. So it has been amazing to see the change and morph since I've been kind of involved with FSHD Society over the last like 7-8 years, something like that. Yeah, it'll be like 8 years because, yeah, I was diagnosed when I was 40, so I'll be 48 this year. And so to be involved with it and see what it was in its beginning and even what this little podcast thing became into what we do with it, that's just a small little fraction of what's being done. And just to see the global effort is, to me, just been massively impressive. And at which the speed that it started to progress has also been impressive. Talk about, you mentioned it a little bit, Project Mercury. I think you just came from, right, a meeting about it, a gathering of that. Talk a little bit of that project. What does it mean? What do you know about it? What can you share?
I guess I just came back from Leiden, which was my first European trip ever. So very fortunate to have been able to go all the way over there to take part in this. But when I heard, and I had a discussion with Neil Kamada and Mark Stone, that they were, you know, putting together this project with a goal to remove the barriers to therapeutic delivery, I thought Australia has to be part of that. Patient access is a real challenge for us in Australia. We often, you know, once a drug is approved, there's quite a time lag between approval overseas and when it can be made available in Australia. And when I think about the efforts that have gone into, you know, fundraising, funding research, driving clinical trial readiness in Australia, to think that we would then see a lag and patients here not being able to access the same therapeutic opportunities that patients overseas access. I mean, that's heartbreaking, and we need to do all we can to make sure that doesn't happen. And beyond that, I really don't think it should matter where you're born to see, you know, whether you can access treatment. So FSHD Global, and I know the society feels the same about this, is looking at how we expand our reach to enable countries that don't have a patient advocate and don't have a formalized organization to look at what we can do to make sure that no one misses out, and that there's some way that you know, people in smaller, you know, around Australia, we have a lot of, you know, little island communities. We have, you know, the whole Pan-Pacific region, really. And so we're trying to think about how we make sure that it doesn't matter where you're born. If there's a treatment available for FSHD, you should be able to have access to it. And so, you know, that was sort of the big picture thinking. And so we knew, yes, we want to be part of this. We want to work together and help out wherever we can. And so I traveled over to Leiden, and let me tell you, that meeting was full of energy. We sat around the table. I'm always miss out someone when I make a list off the cuff, but you know, there was FSHD Europe, and you know, Neil from Canada, and the FSHD Society, and the UK. There was industry representation, you know, Treat NMD. Wow. So it was, and some consultants there that were, you know, along the FSHD Society organized to help us with some of the, you know, really specialized areas that we need to get into. And the energy around the table was, it could have been a 2 or 3 day workshop, I think, instead of a single day. There was so much to get through in a day. But yeah, you know, June kept us on track. She made sure that we got through the, through the materials. But we really laid out, you know, the bones to the project, what the project needs to accomplish, what the global priorities need to be, and then what each local, you know, task force leader will need to take away and work on. And I think that approach will be exactly, you know, the way that we need to target this, because
right.
there are going to be, you know, unique barriers that are present in particular countries that aren't present in others. But there are some items that are much better handled collectively between all of our knowledge and skill sets. So there were ideas, you know, thrown up around the room. It was a truly collaborative approach. And I think, you know, the society did a great job making sure that every voice was heard around the table. Through the discussions, there was also a lot of consideration given to the people that weren't in the room and the countries that weren't represented through the project. So the absolute intention of that project is to make sure that it it considers a global, you know, it really is a global approach. You can't physically have, you know, every country represented in a room, but they certainly were all there in our hearts and minds as we went through, you know, our targets and our intention for the project. So thrilled to be part of it. Removing barriers to clinical trial readiness, you know, we need to make sure that we can enroll and include as many patients as want to be involved in clinical trials. We looked at and we discussed, you know, how we can broaden the clinical trial inclusion criteria, you know, what technology is out there, what do we need to consider, how is it possible. We looked at, you know, outcome measures and biomarkers, you know, what's happening globally to develop that. And patient access was a big part of the discussion as well. You know, how do you present to government all of the economic health information that will be needed to show what the true cost of the disease is, and what the benefit to patients will be in having access to therapies. And we also talked about, you know, what the next period will be. You know, this isn't just a you know, you don't just get one drug approved and then that'll be it, you know, we're finished. This will be a task until not only are there, you know, disease modifying treatments out there, but that we can rebuild muscle as well. If we want, you know, FSHD Global, you know, this is our, I can't speak to the other organizations, but I'm quite sure we're aligned on this. You know, this is a, when we talk about curing the disease, we talk about stopping disease progression and building back.
Yeah.
So it's a, you know, it's a multi-stage approach. It's going to need a combination of therapies, and different people may need a different combination of therapies. So, you know, we're very cognizant that, you know, the efforts that we go through now cannot just be for a single drug approval. It has to be, you know, it's a long race. You know, we're in there to make sure that the, you know, the barriers to that end point that we want to get to are removed. So very exciting.
When you're talking about sitting around the table, the energy, what though seems to be some of those most common or most, I guess, you know, top of the list barriers that are in the way?
If you're talking about, you know, chronologically, you know, what the barriers are now, you know, there are a lot of barriers out there. I mean, the first barrier is going to be having a diagnosed, you know, categorized patient population that can sustain the number of clinical trials that we will be having over the next, you know, 5 years. And these trials last for a long time. So not only recruiting them, but supporting people to remain in the trials so that they see the trials out. You know, the last thing that we want to do is encourage large cohort of biopharmas to bring their drugs into clinic and then not be able to recruit, not just for phase 1/2, but for phase 3 studies. Right. And so, you know, having a patient registry that is simple to use, intuitive, mm-hmm. Is going to be a really important tool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is where there are some differences between the different countries in the approach there. But at the end of the day, what we're doing is the same thing, that we just want to be able to identify our patients, provide the information back to pharmaceutical companies that makes it an easy choice for them to continue their, you know, their FSHD program, and gives them the data that will help them create a really effective clinical trial program. So make the right inclusion criteria, choose the right endpoints, mm-hmm. have the right outcome measures in place. So we want to make sure that we get everyone that we possibly can registered onto a patient registry. And not everyone will qualify for every trial. And just because you don't qualify for one doesn't mean you won't qualify for another one, because they will have different inclusion criteria depending what the drug is targeting and depending what what technology develops over time to be able to measure that drug effectiveness, because that is also a work in progress as well. But that's the first barrier, I think, is really having diagnosed, well-characterized patient population that is in a registry and able to be contacted, recruited, and retained in a clinical trial.
So we need people to be involved in that, right? Get themselves, check those boxes so you can be qualified to be in those trials. Load up, get that list robust, get that. As possible in there, because as more trials become developed and offered, you're right, we don't want to run out of people and participants to be a part or it'll stall out in a drug that could be hopeful.
Yeah. And I think even having, and this is something that, you know, we're looking at in Australia, because it's something that we will be trying to do better. Is making sure people are starting to familiarize themselves with what a clinical trial might look and feel like.
Right.
But also how to weigh up the risks. There's a different level of risk in a phase 1 trial as there is in a phase 3 trial. Mm-hmm. And I really think that as a patient community, and this is me speaking with my patient hat on, it's time now to really start thinking about, you know, what your risk appetite is. We all want to do anything we can for the cause. But, you know, even just being really well informed about your general health and any other comorbidities that you might have, any other conditions that you really want to be across and on top of, to make sure that when you're going through those checklists, don't gloss over anything. Make sure you're really clear and upfront on any other concerns you might have, you know, get yourself checked over, make sure if there's, you know, if you've noticed anything funny to do with your breathing or your heart, or now's the time to really make sure that you look into that, so that when you come, when it comes to the point where you're going through these, you know, inclusion criteria or interviews with biopharma companies, and they ask you, you know, have you got, you know, a condition relating to this, The reason they're asking that is they want to protect your health and make sure that they're really well informed as to, you know, your whole self. So we go into these things with blinkers on sometimes because we're just worried about FSHD.
Right.
But we also need to worry individually. You know, you need to be really well informed as to what your health is so that you help these companies help you manage your own health through these trial processes. So, you know, that's the other way people can prepare. Start in being really well informed as to what participating in a clinical trial will be like. Make sure that you're comfortable and you know the questions you want to ask when you go through those interviews, because it's a conversation. It's not a one-way process.
Right.
You're quite within your rights and you should ask a lot of questions and make sure you're comfortable with participating, because it's not going to benefit you or the FSHD community if you start and then realize, wow, this is not something I want to be part of, and you pull out of the trial. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, as you have every right to do if you become uncomfortable, you stop. But the more that people can really be informed of their own health, of their own risk tolerance, you know, you might decide, look, I really want to, participate in a phase, three or beyond.
Yeah, a little safer. Yeah.
And that is fine. Or you might say, no, you know what, I want to be in this from the start. Most of the drug companies, I believe, a lot of them are going to offer open label extensions, so there can be a real advantage in taking part. Absolutely. From phase one. But everyone needs to weigh that up for themselves and kind of have a bit of an idea of what they're wanting to look into and what they're not interested in. But just because you sign up for a registry doesn't mean that you're automatically giving consent to participate in trials. Just being on the registry, even if you decide you don't want to be part of the trials, still is really valuable because you're giving a picture of the patient population, and your data then is part of the economic health data that's presented to government. So even if you decide you don't want to be on a trial, you still can help by joining the registry and doing nothing more than that even. So I really hope that as many people as possible are willing to take at least that step. But, it's a personal thing. I know a lot of people don't want to share their data. There's been a lot of, data issues, but I can tell you that, data security, privacy is of paramount importance to, the society and to FSHD Global. We know that this is people's information. We don't look at it as just a data set. This is our community that we're, right. That we're compiling into these registries. So it will be treated in the same way as we would our own data. We're very conscious of that. And we do really appreciate and acknowledge how significant it is people being willing to share their data. But hopefully, you're doing it for the greater good, and even just by participating in the registry, you really are helping move the needle.
Yeah, that's all well said for sure. Because I think you hit a lot of good points there. What maybe are people's apprehensions, and why is it important to at least be registered, be an active participant, know what's going on, be connected at the very least, because we don't want to leave any stone unturned. We've heard it through other guests we've had on that's some of the worry is that not enough patients in the registry. What if a drug comes to be released so we can use it, but yet we can't get it to everybody because there's other issues? That would be heartbreaking to know that it's there, but you can't get it to everybody. So the fact that Project Mercury is attacking those problems as a global effort is pretty impressive. I'm glad you shared your insight on it. We've had other guests talk about it a little bit, but not to that, like, hey, this is really what it's about. When push comes to shove, these are some of the issues we're trying to tackle. And it's good to know that there's good energy in that room with the right people in the room, including yourself, to kind of help represent their part of the world and then represent the community as a whole. It's just huge. So then lastly, as this is, World FSHD Day, as we're broadcasting it on that day, anything that Australia is doing? I know it's like a big fiscal push where you are during June 20th, you know, kind of lands right near the end there. Any things that have been going on, maybe not even on FSHD the day, or maybe it just happened, you know, I know this will air on the 20th, but just around even the day, is there anything you guys have planned with FSHD Global?
There is. FSHD Global, you know, we're very fortunate that most of our fundraising efforts come from our corporate community in Australia. Mm-hmm. We have a really philanthropic corporate community in Sydney, particularly. Nice. So around the end of financial year, which is the 30th of June in Australia, we hold a luncheon in Sydney. It's a panel luncheon. We get really interesting people that have expertise in different aspects that are somewhat related to our work at the foundation. Mm. And we pull them together for a panel lunch. So this year we have Mark Boris, who is a iconic Australian businessman from Sydney. And he has a background in, you know, economics and, you know, he's a finance guru. But he's really interested in longevity of human life. Mm. And the brain and, you know, how the, and how, you know, what would it take for people to live, you know, past 150?
Wow.
Yeah. And then we have Scott McGargy, who's the founder and CEO of Springbok Analytics. And you've probably heard of Springbok. They do AI muscle analysis for sports. And we're bringing them on to do AI analysis of MRI for FSHD.
That's great.
Yes, we really believe this will be a game changer for the field. And we can talk about that later if you like. But so we've got Scott coming out from the USA. So he's based in the USA, and Springbok are actually also looking at expanding their operations to Australia. So he's coming out for that. And then we've got Michelle Price, who's an expert on cybersecurity and AI. And then we've got Ramona Roach, who runs Ethica Group, and she's an expert on ethics and, you know, business ethics, AI, and business advisory. And so we bring them together, and we're having a really robust and interesting conversation about, you know, the longevity of life and the ethics behind that. And then we'll tie that back into what we're doing with the foundation and looking at, well, so longevity for FSHD community is a different conversation, right? Yeah. Time is not really our friend at times, and forward-looking can be quite daunting. So, you know, what we're doing with AI and with, you know, muscle analysis, making the invisible visible, is hopefully going to help us make longevity a really different conversation, like we were speaking before. Yeah. So we're hosting this lunch. There'll be about 170 people. We'll have a lovely, interesting panel discussion. We've got, you know, sponsors on board. So it's a fundraiser. But it's really a conversation, and it's really awareness raising about the disease, but in a way that is not, you know, intrusive to the event. We find a really nice balance. So it's a entertaining lunch. It'll be a fundraiser. We'll hold a raffle. And we'll launch I'll give you a little sneak peek. We'll launch a promotion where anyone who gives a donation of over $5,000 for this end of financial year and World FSHD Day will go in the draw to win a table for 10 at our Sydney Chocolate Ball in October, nice. Which is our signature fundraising event. So at the lunch, which will be on the 16th of June, we will launch that campaign, and that'll run through to the end of financial year. And that's sort of our efforts towards World FSHD Day. And then, of course, you know, we're not just a corporate community, we're a patient community. So I know we've got some of our FSHD community holding morning teas. I know one is doing I don't know if you call them Mufti Days in America, but a free dress day. So all American, all Australian schools, or most of them have school uniforms. So usually they have a Mufti Day, which is a free dress day, and the kids bring a gold coin donation. So it'll be a little fundraiser for FSHD. Yes. So, yeah, call it a mufti day. Australians use funny words for everything, I know.
So do we.
Right. Yeah, so we've got a few community events happening as well. I love your shirt. I think we need to get better at branding these events and, you know, making them bigger than us. I love it. When we came to Orlando, we got the sunglasses with Wellness HD Day.
Yes, yes.
And my kids still wear them. But yeah, so we will have a big effort over the month of June. We'll run some social, awareness raising campaigns, you know, through the foundation's pages. But yeah, it'll really start the lunch and that'll be our big fundraising event for the end of financial year this year. So, and you know, we said about the barriers, well, money is a big one. So yes, we're continuously trying to raise funds so that we can, you know, move the needle and put it into the cause. That's how we're doing that in June. Yes.
That's a lot of work. Wow. And you guys are doing that with such a small team, but such powerfulness, right? Within that size. Doesn't matter, right? You can have 2-3 people, 100 people. You just got to do whatever you can with what you have. And it sounds like you're doing a lot with what you have there.
We are. And, you know, I mean, I think having Natalie Cooney on the team, like, you know, she's a volunteer for the foundation. She does this in her spare time. She's our chair. And I should give Nat a shout out because having one volunteer, Nat, I think is the same as having 4 employed staff. She never stops. We were on the phone, I think, 10 p.m. last night going through some arrangements for the event. She gives her heart and soul to this cause, and we would be lost without her. So, we only have a team of 3 staff, but we have a spider web of network of supporters. You know, our board, we've got an amazing board who are actively involved in helping us further the cause. And they're a mix of people with, you know, corporate backgrounds. We've got a couple of, you know, people who are FSHD patients themselves. But everyone that's on that board has a role to play and gives of their time and their effort to help us get where we need to get. So I'm incredibly grateful. They all give phenomenal amounts of time and effort. And it's understandable when people have FSHD that they're so committed to this, but every day I'm quite humbled by all of the people that don't have FSHD,
right,
but that have attached themselves and personally are just so driven to help us get there. Mm-hmm. I know the FSHD Society has a lot of those as well, but, I look to our board and the majority of them, they might have a personal connection somewhere, but they don't have FSHD and they are just so committed and driven. And, I'm so grateful for them. And even our corporate networks, you know, a lot of our biggest corporate supporters don't have a personal connection to the disease, but they see the value in what we do. They see the need there in the FSHD community and they jump on board and they support us year after year. I'm so grateful. I think, I look back to before my diagnosis and I hadn't ever heard of it before. And I just think it's, we're all a little bit selfish like that sometimes. We don't really, there's so many amazing causes out there, I guess, but, you know, you sometimes aren't that cognizant of things that haven't affected you personally. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really quite amazing to look at our spider web of support and think how many people do not have a personal connection, but are just so committed and driven. You know, we've got even a number of ambassadors now that don't have a personal connection to the disease, but are out there every day campaigning for it. And I'm so grateful to them.
Yeah, that is amazing. Wow. That's a good point. Yeah, our community is filled with that, right? It's not just family and people that are directly affected or patients. It's like even people that don't know about it, they're still tied in. They still get committed, almost like, committed to the cause. It's almost like they're adopted into it, you know, adopted into this community of people trying to find a cure and treatment to this disease. You've covered a lot of ground, and we're going to have you back on, I think, for a full episode, Emma. That is one thing I have completely decided, and maybe we'll have to tag team with the rest of your team, having all two, at least Natalie and yourself, maybe even Tamara in there as well, just talking from the FSHD global perspective. I'd love to have you guys on and kind of have almost a roundtable discussion about what you guys are doing and your impact and all the things that you've shared today, but kind of blow it up even bigger. Love to have you back on for that. So
great. Yeah, no, let's do that. And there's just so much happening. So I'm sure you could, pick a point on the diary. But do you know what I think, Tim? I think you should come out to the chocolate ball and do a live radio show.
Yeah.
Mark up 21st of October. Mark says he wants to come, so tell him you'll tag along.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
I think you should and do a live from the chocolate ball.
That would be awesome.
Champagne and chocolate fountains, and it'll be the most extravagant event. You will, people flying from the roof, pouring champagne.
My gosh.
It's like the Cirque du Soleil of events. It's that's my proposal to you, Tim. And we do a full episode down under.
We'll do it there.
In the same time zone.
That sounds great. That's that'd be a good idea. Well, thanks, Emma, for joining us, sharing a little bit of your time on this World FSHD Day. Good luck as you make that final push through your fiscal year, June month. And thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Tim. And thanks for all the work you do. I mean, I love the FSHD Society Radio. I listen to your episodes. I really think you do so much for the cause and so much for, you're so inclusive in making sure that, you cover the views of many and you get everyone to the table. I think you do a great job. And I love podcasts. I think it's just such a great way to get information out. I think we need to do one. We just need the people. But well done to you, because this is great. And thanks for including us in your World FSHD Day podcast. It's a real privilege to be part of it.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Tim. See you later.